This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg, and coming up in the second half of today's show, Sue Belcom joins us with some tips for greening up our winter homes. But joining me in our Bismarck studio is Kim Conoco, the Executive Director of the North Dakota Council on the Arts. Kim, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Also in the Bismarck studio, Brenna Gerhardt, Executive Director of Humanities ND. Brenna, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Ashley.
So we talk all the time the phrase arts and humanities as if they are one entity. Kim, let's start with you. Where do you see arts and humanities working together?
Well, I think the most obvious thing is that in the arts, we're working with a creative process. So we are looking at how we are actually doing the making of the creation of the creative process, the art making, however you want to describe it. So whether that's dance or music or writing or orchestra or choir, all of the disciplines within the arts are a creative process. And what is so beautiful is that in the relationship with humanities is that many artists are not necessarily the best at talking about what they do or making that crossover to communicating the value and the impact. And that is where I feel humanities comes in.
Yeah, the left brain, right brain thing.
Right.
Brenna, well, why don't you add a little bit of talking to that?
Yeah, I think Kim really synthesized it. I mean, the arts do it and the humanities talk about it. So sometimes we'll have a play. At our Game Changer, we had a black police officer who wrote a play about the shooting of an unarmed black man by a black police officer. And that play conveyed 19 different perspectives. And after people watched it, we had a really wonderful conversation about that topic, about our criminal justice system, about racism, about the police force. And it was really powerful. We had police officers in the audience, with members of the general public. People were crying. It was really emotional because the arts can do that. It can just draw people in and kind of disarm them. You kind of drop your guard a little bit when the arts, because you're just taking it all in, and it's just beautiful. It's well curated. And then we can have a conversation based on what we see and what we feel and what we hear. So they really do dovetail together quite nicely.
And it is completely everybody has an individual perspective. But what's really nice about working with humanities and or an organization, which is why I think we've got such a good relationship and it's great that we can share things, is that you can have that conversation, and if, say, there is a moderator or a facilitator, it allows for the discussion to be deep and broad and impactful. But it and if the artist is present, that is even more of a great experience, because then there's that translation tool. They get to hear from the artist, but then a facilitator or a monitor, say from humanities, can say, so this is what you just heard the artist say, and is that what you saw? And they can talk about it.
It reminds me a little of that concept of value added. So like a chef will take something and then do something to the food that you just can't do at home. Even if you're buying good ingredients, the chefs just add a little bit of something else. So what do you think you'd be like without one another? Brenna, we'll start with you.
Yeah, well, the humanities are all about discovering what it means to be human, and you can't do that without art. I mean, we see cave art going way back to the beginning of recorded history. It's so critical to what humans are and who we think we are and who we want to become. And then the humanities come in and kind of analyze it and ask those questions. We bring the critical thinking. We bring the analysis to that. But we are distinct disciplines. We're history, philosophy, literature. At least in the academic realm, we're very separate. But at the same time, it's really getting to the heart of what it means to be human. So you can't have one without the other. There's always some art in a humanities program, and there's always some humanities in an art program.
So has there been any thought about ever combining forces? Obviously, you work together well. Have you ever thought about having the North Dakota Council on Arts and Humanities, for example?
We were together way back when was it would have been over 50 years now. The two groups were actually as one when the legislature formed us. And then Humanities broke off when? Do you know?
74.
So I think that I think that in some ways we both have difficulty talking about our value and impact, even though we as directors of our organizations and everyone associated with us knows of our value and impact. But I think that the more we work together, the better it is. But to come together as one organization, I'm not sure would actually – I think that actually might confuse people even more.
Even more because it's so distinct. I do think that that is true because the arts – I mean, and in humanities, we really need to go back and really focus on what we do well so that we can complement each other so there's less groupthink, because that's really important, that there's always a fresh approach, a fresh perspective. And I think you get – that more by having two distinct organizations. And we have different visions and missions. There is a lot of overlap. But preserving that, I think, is really – we would do a disservice to the citizens of North Dakota by being under one roof.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one thing that we do with all of our applicants is they must engage in a public activity as part of their creative process. We want them to share. So that can be as a discussion or a rehearsal or just anything that can happen with the public there. And I think that it would be wise, and we could talk about this for the future, but to include in some way a humanity segment to that so that there is a facilitator or a moderator who can then help with that exchange, because quite often creative people are not necessarily good at sharing verbal information about the process.
Yeah, and that is totally our purview.
Yeah.
And we love it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that concept of how you do come together to make sure, because this conversation, it seems very evident to me that you have a very good working relationship with one another. But so often, even within one organization, if you keep departments separate, you get that sort of siloed approach. And I might go into something with a complete radio perspective and just assume that TV would want to do it the same way. And TV is saying, I'm sorry, did you forget that we have visuals? You know, and even though we're both trying to tell a story and maybe a very similar story, but in very different ways. So how do you, as organizations, make sure that you're working together well?
We talk to each other a lot. Mm-hmm. We certainly do share certain programs. We talk about fundraising for projects together, depending on what they are. But I think it's about the relationship that Brenna and I have, and then we take that information back to our board and to our staffs and really discuss how these two organizations are sisters going down this path. And really, because we do serve the entire state, both
Absolutely.
Of us, I think it's important, and we just communicate a lot. I wish we could communicate more than we do, but we really do try.
Yeah, we both have small budgets and a statewide mission. And so we really need these partnerships so that we can both be successful and achieve our mission on a tiny budget, because we want to reach all North Dakotans, but that's hard to do for the price of a postage stamp per person. So we need to leverage all of our resources to really try and build a more thoughtful, informed, and creative North Dakota.
And especially out in some of the rural communities where there just isn't access. So we'll go to them and humanities will go to them. And anytime that we can work together, we really do try to.
Yeah, and within those rural communities, there is sort of this, to use a well-worn phrase, a blessing and a curse. And the blessing part of these rural communities is it's so easy to get to the person in charge, and it's so easy to round up that community support. So from an arts perspective, let's talk about the blessings of so many rural communities.
Some of the best work comes out of the rural communities because there's less thoughts about being judged and there is much more of excitement about doing new things. And I think one of the things we want to try to do is clearly create partnerships, say, with the people at the library, with the people in the schools, with the people on the city council and the artists, arts educators, et cetera, so that in those smaller communities there is a more well-rounded perspective of the project that's come in, whether it's a creative process or project, and then the humanities view of it and how we talk about it and how it really reflects our society.
Brenna, the blessings of the rural.
I'm from Central North Dakota, a tiny town, so that's kind of where my heart is at. The library for me was just a lifeline and just this passport to a whole new world that I had no idea was out there. I mean, that just is what sparked my curiosity, and I'm so thankful to have had that. And when you go – we go to Velva and we can get 40 people at a book discussion, and they're engaged and they know each other. There's just – it's fun. It's fun. They have fun. You know, they're there for fun. They're there for – this is their entertainment, and I just love that. And we get fewer people at a book discussion in Bismarck.
For sure.
Because the people don't know each other necessarily or afraid of offending each other.
Or there's competition for events.
Oh, right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's probably one of the best things about rural communities is there is less going on, so whatever is planned – is the center of attention for that week. And it's great.
It's nice to be this. I like being this. Ask my husband. I love that. That's what I live for.
Let's do it.
Let's do this.
Well, I do want to get on to many events that you have coming up, but the flip side of that question, the challenges of working in a rural, and just briefly.
It's hard to get out there. It's hard to, first of all, get the partnerships established and then get the ball rolling. So I think just the added issue of time spent in planning and preparation is always a little harder when we're not boots on the ground there.
Yep, and the cost.
The cost.
Travel costs, and there's a few resources in those communities.
Because you don't just want to go and drop in.
No.
You want to go and be there and become a part of it and stay and enjoy it and then see what seeds it reaps.
We're visiting with Kim Conico, Executive Director of North Dakota Council on the Arts, and Brenna Gerhart, Executive Director of Humanities ND. And Brenna, what's this on your website about We the People?
Oh, my favorite. My favorite. So this is a civics education program that we do across the state, and it's for high school and middle school students. And it teaches them the foundations of our Constitution, and then it teaches them to engage in public debate on critical issues facing our democracy. It teaches them the foundations of our democracy. We bring in constitutional scholars from around the nation to train North Dakota teachers in the summer. And so our hope is that future generations of voters are more thoughtful, they're more informed, they understand the democratic process, they're involved in that process, they think much more critically about it. And on January 15th, we have our state competitions. So students from across the state come and they do mock congressional hearings in front of some of our Supreme Court justices and some other lawyers. And they're going to be debating things like, do you agree with Patrick Henry or James Madison on the First Amendment and the free exercise of religion in our country? They're going to talk about birthright citizenship. Are there changes that need to be made? They might talk about the Electoral College and debates that we're having now because the Constitution is a living, breathing document. And we're still debating what it means and how we want our country to function. And so it's a fun, engaging project, and it gives me hope for the future if you're reading the news now. Yeah, we need
I'm wondering where you teach the future politicians how to get on Twitter and make fun of each other.
Yeah,
that, don't do that.
Oddly enough, that is not part of the curriculum.
Good.
Yeah, yeah.
I noticed there's a deadline coming up in April, and you're looking for, was it two students and a teacher to apply for this program?
So that is actually to go to a national training.
Okay.
So We the People is a national contest run by the Center for the Constitution. And it's an opportunity for teachers and some students to get additional training, the ones that are just so passionate about this and have not had enough at the state competition and want to dig in a little bit more and bring that knowledge back to the state.
Kim, last time you were on the air with us, you teased us about a big announcement, and try as I might, I couldn't shake it out of you. But now you're allowed to make this announcement.
We're ready. We're launching a program that is called Creative Placemaking, Joining North Dakota's 8 Regions. I have no idea why there are 8 regions. I have no idea who drew the lines on the map. And I am completely aware that many agencies use different regions with different lines. But the idea is that this will be a statewide public art project, and it will take place in all of the 8 regions of the state. The vehicle is public art, which means that that can take on so many different kinds of forms. It can be big or small. It can be under your feet or in the air. It could be a festival. It could be site-specific in relation to its surroundings. And it can express a lot about community value and enhance the environment. It can transform a landscape. And it can question our assumptions. And the idea is that within the 8 regions, there are 8 cities. We are going to ask each region to place the public art piece in a rural area, not in the larger city. Mm. And the work will be based on the context of that particular region, its cultural heritage. Maybe it's a historic site. Maybe it's about an event that happened or a person who lived there. But each region will get to decide on its own what that piece will look like. And then we will help through the Arts Council to provide leadership as well as a program coordinator who will serve the whole state and will go and will visit to each of the 8 regions. There will be stakeholder committees in each of the regions. And then we'll help them plan and fundraise, select and build these 8 works. What we're real happy about is that it will pull together the state in terms of making a statement about its artistic creativity and communities in rural areas. It will definitely be beneficial in community connections and partnerships and a network. And eventually it will be able to promote tourism to these 8 sites. We see that the program will probably run 5 to 7 years. I am going to go to the legislature and ask for an appropriation, but in addition, there will be fundraising from private individuals and foundations. And I think it will also just help build a stronger case for NDCA in terms of its extensive reach and its value and its impact. And this is a program for everyone in the state that we hope will help the other states take notice of who we are in our arts and culture.
Yeah, sounds like you won't be busy at all.
Oh, no.
With that. No, not at all.
But very excited.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Congratulations.
You know, we premiered it at the Main Street Initiative mm-hmm. Summit, and I just have to say that the response from everyone who was involved in our panel discussions in our workshop was astounding, and we've gotten such great follow-up in terms of people's ideas.
Brenna, the Game Changer Ideas Festival, this is such an exciting event every mm-hmm. year. Typically, it's around October.
Yep.
But you've already, of course, started working on the 2021, and the theme is bias. Why did you choose mm-hmm. this theme?
Mm-hmm. Well, bias really encompasses a lot of things. It's media bias, and you see that with the fake news and things that are happening out there, the advent of social media. It's racial bias, and we've seen a rise in white supremacy. It's gender bias. It's so many things, and it affects everything. I mean, it's really about your worldview. So we think it's such a critical issue, especially right now. And one of the speakers I'd like to focus on is Islay Saslow, who won the Pulitzer Prize for his work on white supremacist Derek Black, who's the godson of David Duke. He was the next generation of white supremacists. They thought he was the future. He's prominent on the Stormfront website, which, as you know, is where all white nationalists gather. And he has since renounced his views. He went to college and he had some wonderful friends that didn't give up on him, even though they knew he was a white supremacist, and just kept chipping away at him. And he's renounced all those beliefs, left white supremacy behind. He wanted to live a quiet life. He changed his name. But then when he saw the things happening in Charlottesville and the rhetoric that's being used today, he felt culpable. Like Derek Black felt like, I did this. I helped build this. I spent, you know, the first 19 years of my life doing this. And he wanted to come out and spread his message and share that message. So he told his story to Islay Saslow. And Islay is going to come and share that. And I think that's just really important to understand what's going on in our nation and why we've seen this rise in white supremacy, what it's done, how someone from the inside helped curate this and then can speak and inform us and let us know what we need to do to stop it.
And you're doing your – it's on October 8th.
It's on October 8th, yep, in Bismarck. At the event center here. Next year, I'll be in Fargo. We're going to start moving it around the state, which I think is really exciting because it's statewide. We want everyone in the state to come. It'll be live streamed. You can go to your local library and watch it with a group of other thoughtful and informed citizens and have a discussion there too. That's another thing that we've been adding because this really needs to be a statewide discussion.
Kim, we have about 2 minutes left, and there is an interesting study that just came out recently from the World Health Organization and the correlation between health and arts. What did this find, and what stuck out to you?
Well, it's a huge report. Mm-hmm. So it synthesizes over 900 articles that relate the arts to both mental and physical health outcomes. And there is no question that there was evidence to support arts intervention in healthcare and greater cost effectiveness compared to other possible health interventions. And there has been a major increase in terms of research that's been done. So basically, they are saying, yes, the arts improve health and well-being. They mm-hmm. support the implementation of arts interventions. They share the knowledge. They support added health value of engagement. They promote public awareness of the potential benefits of arts engagement. They strengthen structures and mechanisms for collaborations. And it's interesting just because, you know, we as involved in arts and culture and creativity, we know this. We see this. It's apparent every day in every project that we do. But it was nice to have the World Health Organization kind of give a stamp of approval to this research. So this will show up on our e-newsletter, and there is a website that you can go to download a very large document.
I was excited when I read the one that said you should do art even if you're bad at it.
It's exactly.
Like, hey, all right.
Exactly. Try something.
This has been a fascinating conversation. Kim Conico, Executive Director of the North Dakota Council on the Arts. Kim, thank you for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
And Brenna Gerhart, Executive Director of Humanities ND. Thank you for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you.
You can stay tuned to humanitiesnd.org and nd.gov/arts for more information on arts and humanities programming throughout the year. Still to come on Main Street, a blending of arts and humanities with poetry from Studio 47. But now, the news.
From the Prairie Public Newsroom, I'm Todd McDonald. North Dakota's Tourism Division has started to work on marketing plans for the proposed Theodore Roosevelt Library in Medora. Fundraising efforts are underway for the library. This is Tourism Director Sarah Ottie Coleman.
We want to be out there touting and selling it because things like group tours and even the global marketing that we do, they want to book it years in advance. And we aren't quite at the point where we dare give a year yet. But we definitely have been teasing it, and people are very interested. So we're super excited about the potential for that and are really confident that it's going to happen and is going to really add an elevated experience to people visiting North Dakota.
The 2019 legislature approved $50 million for upkeep of the library. if $100 million could be raised privately. There will be a third party officially on the ballot in North Dakota on the fall ballot. The Libertarian Party collected enough signatures to get its own column on the primary ballot. The Libertarians will also have the names of three presidential electors on the general election ballot. The party had to gather at least 7,000 signatures by April 6th. It submitted petitions last fall. As Congress nears approval of a deal to replace the North American Free Trade Agreement, some farmers and ranchers are disappointed in the lack of country of origin labeling in the bill, also known as COOL. COOL supporters say a loophole allows foreign importers to put product of the U.S. on their beef, even if it's minimally processed in the country, hurting domestic cattle ranchers. Pettibone cattle rancher Shelley Zisch says under the current law, packers can do something as simple as adding salt or grinding the beef within the United States to qualify it as a U.S. product.
It's something we've been fighting for, the product of the U.S. label, and now they're kind of making a mockery of it because they can put whatever they want in it. And we believe that product of the U.S. should be only products that are born, raised, and harvested in the United States.
Zisch says labeling, as it stands now, benefits large companies. She notes that four corporations control 85% of packing in the country, and two of those are international companies. Zisch says it's pushing domestic ranchers out of business.
We should be able to make a living doing it without having to worry about deceptive labeling practices being done with foreign countries.
Opponents of such labeling say it's too costly for packers. And a new natural gas plant proposed west of Williston could help reduce wasteful flaring in the northern part of the Bakken oil patch. The Bismarck Tribune is reporting Denver-based Outrigger Energy 2 plans to build the facility in Williams County to process up to 250 million cubic feet of gas per day, with the option of expanding to handle up to 450 million cubic feet. From the Prairie Public Newsroom, I'm Todd McDonald.
This is Poetry from Studio 47. Welcome. Today's poet is Christine Stewart Nunez. She was born on May 3, 1973, in Des Moines, Iowa. After receiving her BA in English from the University of Northern Iowa, she moved to Turkey for 2 years, where she taught at Tarsus American College. When she returned home to the United States, she attended Arizona State University, where she received her MA in literature. Shortly after graduating, she enrolled in the PhD program at the University of Nebraska, Lincoln, where she studied under Ted Kooser. With her doctorate completed in 2007, she began teaching at South Dakota State University, where she offers courses on creative writing. Her work includes The Love of Unreal Things, Unbound and Branded, Postcards on Parchment, Keeping Them Alive, Untrust, and Blue Words Greening. Stewart Nunez has won the Whirling Prize, she has written notable essays that have been listed in Best American Essays, and she has won the Lyric Essay Prize from Lindenwood Review. Her work orbits around travel, family, loss, disability, and the complexities of love, both maternal and conjugal. Today's poem is Wonder Woman Relaxes. This particular poem comes from her collection, Untrust, and throughout this book, there are several poems about Wonder Woman doing ordinary things. It's a great way to remind the reader that even superheroes have normal lives, that once they have returned home and the front door is closed, they need to relax just like everyone else. I like how this poem nudges me to consider the women in my own life, my wife, my mother, my sisters, how they are all superheroes who do so much for others. I also like how this poem combines the extraordinary and the ordinary, and I like how it wants me to rethink the meaning of that word, superhero. This is Wonder Woman Relaxes by Christine Stewart Nunez. Closing her steno-pad at 5, Diana contemplates cuisine, not the break room's lime jello, superfood, spinach sautéed in olive oil, quinoa pilaf with Turkish apricots. Once home, glasses off, hair ponytailed, sweatpants on, she slices a pineapple like it's cream cheese. As she julienne's jalapenos, she needs no magic bracelet. Golden lassos won't quicken the task. She admires the cut's discernment. When her man's in trouble, Wonder Woman busts him out, slaps, slugs, strikes. What does it matter if she breaks a nail or three? Her man doesn't see her. Post-mission, he's safe watching TV, and Diana is free to pummel villains with Superman, Aquaman. They love her feminine touch. Tonight, comics will wait. Skimming across the dusty wine rack, she chooses a cab, Opus 1, 85, and pulls out the company, Creme Brulee. On the balcony, she dines. The city's honks and calls her symphony. Sirens pulse through her veins like a heartbeat.
You and me both, Wonder Woman. Enjoy that creme brulee. Studio 47 is hosted and curated by Patrick Hicks. All poems are used with permission and recorded at Augustana University. It's produced by Peter Folliard. Coming up still on Main Street, we hear from Sue Balcom, speaking of Wonder Woman.
Next time on The Pulse, few things will put your life into focus like almost dying.
From the moment that I had my last rights read to me, I've realized that I'm living in overtime. And in overtime, there's this profound sense of focus where everything has to be so intentional. Every second truly has to count.
What can we learn from people who have found a new mission?
Tonight at 8 Central, 7 Mountain, here on Prairie Public.
You're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton with Ashley Thornburg, and we're behind the mics in Fargo. And in our microphone in Bismarck, we've got Sue Balcom, because it's time to talk about, you know, Main Street Eats.
Thanks, Sue, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Gets to be this time of year where, okay, fine, sometimes the trees are pretty and there's lots of snow and sometimes it's pretty, but really you want to see things are alive.
And the seed catalogs are coming daily into your mailbox and you're poring over them and your little heart lifts with joy at the thought that winter will soon be over.
Yes, I've cleansed my eye palette of white and gray and brown and it's time for some color, maybe some green.
Yes, and you know, if you're longing for green in your house, the current trend these days with young people is to actually start growing houseplants again, which is something that I never, ever really gave up because I just love watching things grow. And so I have some things that you can do right now to green up your house. You know, houseplants are really good for your they clean the air. They're just fun. You can talk to them. There's something to take care of if you can't. If you're allergic to pets, most of the time you can have one or two green plants. But you have to take special care of them in the wintertime because it is North Dakota. And I had this beautiful avocado tree once. I mean, I grew it from a little seed. It sprouted. You know, I've been trying for years to get an avocado to grow it. Finally, one of them started sprouting, and we went skiing in January, and I couldn't think about skiing because I thought, I hope my plant doesn't die till I get home. I hope that avocado doesn't die. And it got big, and it got beautiful, and I was so proud of it, and I put it in the corner of my sun porch, which would be south and east, and of course, it gets cold in the wintertime, even when the sun is shining. And I think it got too cold from the wind blowing by those big windows. He died, and I cried. But I had other house plants. And so now if you've got plants, don't put them up against the window, even if it seems sunny and beautiful out in the wintertime. You want them to have lots of light, but you do not want them to be pressed up against a cold window pane.
Right.
Because apparently they don't like that.
Issue is humidity, because in the winter in North Dakota, when it gets as cold as it can get,
we get thirsty.
it gets remarkably dry. It's drier than the Sahara because the cold air doesn't hold any moisture.
Right. And so it's really good. Well, in the first place, having lots of plants will contribute a little bit to your humidity because, you know, you are watering and the soil is wet, not as wet as it is in the summertime. But misting your plants in the wintertime is really important, as well as keeping the dust off of them. You know, like I bake a lot, and so I have flour in the air, and sometimes it's like, ooh, look at my poor plants. They don't like to have their little pores clogged any more than you do. And so in addition to misting them, you may once in a while want to take a microfiber cloth and kind of attract some of that dust from the bottom of their leaves where their little holes are.
Does that apply to cat hair?
Oh, it could. Cat dander, yeah. Probably more than cat hair. And you should brush your cat in the wintertime, too, because they don't get outside as much as they do in the summertime. They can't roll around in the grass and the concrete like mine does and get rid of all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, otherwise it's the sneezing season for some people.
Right. That's why you should always have a pet plant in your house. And speaking of, I just got to throw this in there, but you know, I have to just chuckle when I think about how expensive chia seeds are at the health food store.
Right?
And we used to throw them away after our chia pets died back in the 70s. You remember those?
Chia pets are coming back.
They're still selling them, Sue.
I know. They have all different kinds of chia pets now, dead presidents and live presidents and
the golden girls.
The golden girls, yeah. This is what I want in my house, a golden girl
chia
with
Sophia.
Green hair. Oh, no. So anyway, those are kind of fun, and I think I actually bought one for my husband at one time, and he killed it. But don't overwater your plants in the wintertime. You know, that's like super awesome that you have to like water them at all, and then don't overwater them because they're kind of dormant, you know, like they get like us, we get a little bit like, I don't feel like getting up off the couch today, so I'm not going to do anything. And so if you water them too much, then they're definitely going to get root rot and they become more vulnerable to diseases. Some of them don't make it through the winter.
Now, is tap water okay? Because they're, you know, we have chemicals in the water as it's processed.
And I hate to say this, but I never use water straight out of the tap to water my plants. I will collect. I'm crazy water person. Like, I hate wasting water. Even though we have an abundance of it in this country, I always, when I want hot water for dishes, I will save all the cold water until it starts running hot in a jug, and then I save those jugs out in my porch, and they become room temperature, you know, so they're ambient temperature, same as your soil, and the chemicals leach out of them when you do that. And then I also save almost all my bath water to water plants.
That is really, really
good for you.
insane, say
I've
it,
never
Doug.
Heard
I know
that
what you're
before.
Thinking. Well, yes. Well, the good thing is that, you know, there's baking soda. I use baking soda and Epsom salt when I take a bath, and that is really good for plants. They love the little trace minerals in the Epsom salt, magnesium and things like that.
And
the baking soda is kind of like a pH balancer there. And especially when I start growing plants in February for my garden, that becomes critical because I don't like to waste good water on those plants. And so everybody benefits from that. But you can take it one step further. Like when I'm canning, I save the water from my canner and take it outside and water my plants with it. Or water from cooking pasta, which is the same thing. It has starch in it, which is kind of a supplement. But you've got to be careful now when you're using these other things. You got to keep an eye on that moisture level.
All right. Here's an idea for the root cellar market next year, Sue.
Yeah.
You've got these jars of root cellar plant soup. Just for the plants, folks. Don't try to cook this on the stove.
But we're gonna get a few comments about that, I'm sure.
I'm just waiting for you to get the rain barrel and use that to take your bath and then recycle that for your plants.
I want rain barrels so bad. Nothing breaks my heart more than when it rains on the west side of the river, because as you know, we're not as wet as you guys are on the east side of the river. At least traditionally we're not. We're kind of watching that right now and praying that we don't have too much moisture this winter. But every time it rains, I think to myself, oh, I need these great big collectors. You can use gravity to water your garden. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's just a win-win situation. And we should really think about this more, is, you know, saving water, preserving water, keeping it from running off into the ocean and getting too salty to use for anything.
You know, when you were on that ski trip worrying about your avocado plant, that made me think about, well, a lot of people take vacations this time of year. So What kind of care do you need to think about for those houseplants you're leaving behind?
If you're leaving for more than a week, you're going to have somebody come in and check your plants. You really, really need that because they can usually go probably a week, maybe two, depending upon the kinds of plants. I have lots of succulents. They don't mind being left to themselves in the wintertime. But, you know, if you have anything like my Christmas cactus right now, they're pretty active. My Hoya plant, I'm hoping, will bloom in close to Easter. So, you know, you just kind of, if you're going to leave for more than a week, and then, you know, don't let it get too stinking cold wherever they're at. You know, if you need to move them in away from your outer walls, if it's going to get 30 below, it's going to be, they're going to not like that very much.
How do you know when to change or reinvigorate the soil?
You know, I do that in the either in the spring or the fall. I will actually take them all outside, and I will empty them out on a great big table, you know, shake all that dirt off their roots. I will take that used soil and put it into my barrel that I compost, my turning barrel that I compost with, and then I start adding kitchen scraps to that soil, and I rebuild that soil rather than just toss it out. And so then in the spring, or you know, 6 months later, I'll have some really good garden soil again. And I do this with all of my flowering pots that I have set on my patios and stuff. I never throw that old dirt away. So then you get some good potting soil without those little grains of water retention diaper granules things. I do not like that, because then when you water your plants too much, because people have a tendency to kill more plants from overwatering than anything else, those little bubbles or those little things that hold water, that water never drains away, and they can really, really root rot fast.
Okay.
Well, I actually mix a good potting soil with a little vermiculite, green sand, you know, a couple things to aerate it out a little bit. Then I take a coffee filter. My husband buys coffee filters that are too short for our coffee maker sometimes, and so I get those, and I put them in the bottom of my pots with holes in them. Then that way you put your dirt in there. When you water your dirt, that dirt won't come out of the bottom of your pot. Just the water will. And so give them I never hardly ever fertilize. If I do fertilize my plants, I will recycle or use leftover fish fertilizer that I use for my greenhouse plants when I'm growing tomatoes and peppers and that kind of thing. So other than that, I don't really use a lot of fertilizer, but I do put new soil in them every year because they like that. I also, when their leaves fall off, you know, like sometimes they lose some leaves, they get a little brown. You can clip them or pinch them. I just lay those on the top of the soil so that they can decompose and go back into the ground where they belong.
We check in with Root Cellar Sue every Thursday on Main Street.
Thank you, Sue.
Thank you, guys.
What's happening is next.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by AARP North Dakota, protecting families from fraud and scams, and helping more than 62,000 family caregivers who help make it possible for their loved ones to live at home. Creating real possibilities in North Dakota. AARP.org/ND.
Well, that is a question we ask ourselves once a week here on Prairie Public. And in studio with me is Christine McClellan, who works oftentimes with the events that Prairie Public is putting on.
I do.
So we thought she'd be very fitting to talk about events throughout the state.
Yes, I know about events. So you can learn about archaeology in North Dakota it's tonight, January 9th, at the former Governor's Mansion State Historic Site in Bismarck. Amy Blyer, who is an archaeologist at the State Historical Society of North Dakota, will explore what is archaeology, how is archaeology practiced in North Dakota, and why is archaeology relevant today. So again, that's tonight from 7 to 8 p.m., and it is free.
There were recently many new species discovered in North Dakota.
Yeah, I read about that.
This archaeology. So it is still relevant.
It's relevant
today. The North Dakota Human Rights Arts Festival exhibition has a showing in Fargo at the Plains Art Museum. This is a juried arts festival. It has 2D, 3D, and even some live performance art. This is opening in the Fargo at the Plains Art Museum, and then it is going to be traveling to Bismarck, Grand Forks, and Minot. So this is on display now at the Plains Art Museum in Fargo on the third floor, and admission to the Plains is free.
Ice Fest at Thief River Falls. This is Friday through Sunday, January 10th through 12th. There's snowshoeing by candlelight, a cub tournament.
Cube.
Aren't I wasn't sure. I know. I'm not. I know. That's that yard game, right?
With it them. Is.
Yep. 5K and 10K events. There's boys and girls hockey games, snow coloring, snowblower races, and more. So this starts 5 p.m. on Friday, January 10th, and goes all weekend. Many of the events are free, and it's for all ages.
Well, I'll stick with that theme of trying to embrace the cold temperatures with the Frozen Bison Fat Bike Race and Festival. This is happening on the 11th in Minot, and there is going to be a number of different races, including snowshoeing races, and there is a post ride, entertainment, and door prizes to the racers, whether you are snowshoeing or fat biking. This is again on Saturday, and it gets going at 10 a.m., 9:30 if you are racing, but 10 a.m. to show up and cheer on people who are out there doing a lot
exercise
more than I'm going to be doing
you
outside this weekend.
Well, there's a Nerf lock-in at the Holly Public Library in Holly. This is Saturday, January 11th. Get out of those winter blues and join the Holly Public Library for a Nerf game. So you can choose one of two sessions. There's one at 2 o'clock and one at 3 o'clock. Sign-up is required. Participants need to bring your own Nerf blasters and darts for this Nerf game. And this is for ages 8 and up, and it's free.
Oh, I'd be so bad at that. Fight the Frost. Again, staying on theme here. It's winter, but you can do some fun things indoors at the Fargo Dome January 10th through 12th as they host a number of different fun games, including inflatable carnival games. These are going to be indoors again. There's also going to be archery tag and dodgeball, mini golf. You know, I think golf is very boring, but for some reason in January, golf sounds very appealing to me. This is, again, at the Fargo Dome, January 10th through 12th. Fight the Frost. It's $7 to $15, and of course, it's family-friendly.
Learn about families around the world at the Bismarck Veterans Memorial Library on Monday, January 13th. There's going to be informational booths, cultural activities, crafts, and storytelling. It's open to families of all origins. So it's 6 to 8 p.m. Again, that's on Monday, and it's free and family-friendly.
There is a Space Quest in Moorhead at the Planetarium at Minnesota State University, Moorhead, January 12th and 13th. So this is Saturday at 10 a.m. and Sunday at 3 p.m. as you get to go and appreciate the winter sky from the indoors. $3 to $6, and again, Saturday, 10 a.m., Sunday at 3 p.m. at MSUM's Planetarium. What's your pick of the week?
My pick is the Candlelight Ski and Owl Prowl. This is at the Rydell National Wildlife Refuge in Erskine, Minnesota, on Saturday, January 11th. Who might you hear? Come and enjoy luminary lit trails via cross-country skis or snowshoes, and there are owl calling stations. Ooh. You might see some owls. So this is hosted by the Friends of Rydell and Glacier Ridge Refuge Association. And this is Saturday. It starts at 4:45 p.m. and ends around 8:30, and it's free. But check their website or Facebook for weather updates, because you never know what's going
to
happen.
We have very much had a theme to this week's What's Happening, and mine is going to continue on that theme with the Huga Hideout. This is in Bismarck on the 11th. I hope I got that right. I don't speak Danish, but this is a term for coziness and feelings of wellness and contentment in the winter. And so it's a good time to grab a blanket and a great book and cozy up, have cocoa, get your cat, get a puzzle. Cats and puzzles really go
well
together.
These are all my favorite things.
Yeah, well, there you go. You are already practicing it, but we can practice this together in Bismarck at the Bismarck Veterans Memorial Library Saturday from 2 to 4, and it's free. That's what's happening.
we'd like to thank the North Dakota Council on the Arts for supporting arts programming along with our members and other sources here on Prairie Public.
This is Dakota Daybook for January 9th. A series of Northern Pacific passenger trains pulled into Fargo in the early morning hours on this date in 1910. The seven eastbound trains had been scheduled to arrive in Fargo 3 days earlier. Rumors of their whereabouts had circulated through the city, as nervous friends and family members feared the worst for the train's passengers. With a blizzard raging through Montana and rumors of a horrific train wreck blocking the Northern Pacific's lines, many imagined the passengers huddling for warmth within the confines of the train cars, or even worse. As it turned out, the passengers were experiencing a much different situation. Most of the trains had left from Seattle on January 3rd. Familiar with January in Montana, several snowplows accompanied the trains. Near Big Timber, Montana, the trains were met with blowing snow in a 40-mile-an-hour gale. Met by 3-foot-high snowdrifts, train operators dispatched the snowplows. The front snowplow began to clear the snow, but the blistering winds toppled it sideways across the tracks. Workers attempted to turn the plow upright, but the blowing snow quickly packed the machine tightly into the snowdrifts. It quickly became apparent that it would not be possible to remove the plow until the blizzard let up. In the meantime, the passengers received the news that they would be delayed in their present position for some number of days. Undeterred to have a jolly time on their trip, passengers on train number 2 began planning a number of entertainments to be enjoyed while the blizzard continued. The highlight was to be a fancy dress ball in the train's dining car. Several of the men made the short trip into nearby Big Timber and purchased material and novelties to be used for the ball's preparations. The women on the train busied themselves by creating gowns to wear. One of the passengers, Alfred Landry, left the train in search of a musician. He found a dentist in the nearby village of Pier who happened to play the 3-string violin. While friends and family in Fargo worried about the fortunes of their loved ones, the dentist from Pier was busy enjoying such a good time that he played from 8:30 in the evening until 1:30 in the morning. Today's Dakota Daybook was written by Jamie Job. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
In northern Minnesota, when the ground freezes, work begins on tiny hockey rinks.
It's magical. Really, it is.
It's just fun to come out and to be able to come out and skate like whenever you want.
How backyard ice has fostered freezing fun for generations. Also, Steve Inskeep speaks with President Trump's National Security Advisor about the conflict with Iran. That's on the next morning edition from NPR News.
Starting at 4 a.m. Central, right here on Prairie Public.
That's it for this Thursday edition of Main Street. Coming up tomorrow on the show, a philosophical look at immigration and migration. That is the theme of this month's episode of Why? Philosophical discussions about everyday life. And we visit with Jack Russell Weinstein. Also tomorrow on the show, we have our normal news discussion with Dave Thompson, and Madeline reviews The Irishman and Marriage Story. That's coming up tomorrow on Main Street. Until then, enjoy the rest of your day.